One of the greatest loves of my life when I was a young poet was Eleanor Wiley. And in fact, if you didn't love her, you were out, as far as I was concerned. I met a woman named Eleanor, I believe it was Robinson, in New York. During the war, she was an active socialist at the Conscientious Objector of Norman Thomas's newspaper, and had a delightful evening with her. About 2 or 3 years later, a young man called me up and said, I met your friend Eleanor Robinson in Washington, and she has a message for you. She asked me to call you and give you this message. She is now Eleanor Wiley. She had married Mr. Wiley, the first husband, and she's living with all of Eleanor's old hats, velvet roses, silverware. It seems that whenever Eleanor left a man, she left her beautiful wardrobe, and the men then loved the wardrobe all the rest of their lives. So my friend had become Eleanor Wiley. Well, that was, again, a note of reality in the book. Well, how did Miss Oh, I forgot to tell you that Miss McIntosh is bald. That's her secret. She's as bald as a billiard ball or a busy highway. She says no grass grows on a busy street. And she also loves to recite old proverbs about her baldness. The bald head is soonest shaved is one of them. It was a terrible pain to her to wear that red wig in the nursery because she's a lost soul. Well, she's almost a transvestite. She's not quite. She's very abnormal. I'll leave you to figure out just exactly how. It's sadder than one can put into words. She's the lost soul of the universe, really. And she has her biblical symbolism, too, which I won't go into, because I was on the Merv Griffin show 5 times, and they said, just don't quote the Bible ever because your rating will drop. I'm not going to quote the Bible here. I don't want my rating to drop. But, well, I'm afraid I'll have God in this next paragraph, though. That'll be all right. She's telling how she was always bald. She was born bald, and she will die bald. I will have to say that the Bible says that bald we come into the world, and on the last day of creation, when the heavens open and the hail and brimstone rain down, we will all be bald at the end of time. And it's man without illusions. That's what the baldness means. Without his dreams, his mask, as Joseph Campbell would call it, his illusions. So this is a part which I like about Miss McIntosh when she discovered she was bald, when she was a little girl in Iowa. What's your Iowa? I was never there. And I wrote with a great happy feeling that no one in What Cheer would ever read Miss McIntosh, of course. And they have a big full-page first-page review of Miss McIntosh, my darling, because Miss McIntosh came from What Cheer. They liked it. I don't know whether they read the book or not, of course. You know, they liked at least the idea that they were in a book. This is Miss McIntosh's story of her own baldness. Things had been so sad, and her constitution unwritten, and her days numbered. Always this baldness. It had pursued her from place to place, leaving her no peace but in the eyes of others. And that had been her life from the beginning, when bald she had come out of her mother's womb, having no hair or feather to cover her. Bald, she would sink into her grave, she did believe, her old eyes smiling. And it was ever so as on the night before her marriage to the preacher. She showed him her baldness. That was her mistake. And he fled, as if he had seen the end of time. Why, however, should she have trusted him or any preacher who was himself the lost soul, the bald heart so much worse, according to her way of thinking, than the bald head whom God hath created. Whom God had created, let God not put away with the brown leaves falling, with the stars going out. Oh, the weariness of her mother, it was that, she believed, which had caused this baldness. The failure of her mother to love her father, and the balls meeting the balls, and the death meeting the death, and the whirlwind, and the waters, and the everlasting baldness of snowy altitudes, unshadowed by one hair, or feather, or wing. Even as a little child, she had wept, hiding her tears in the dark, carrying her head as high as any. When she was 3 years old and had first noticed that she had no hair, she had worn a little toupee which she had snatched from an old doll's head. Why, it was hard to believe now, but bald she had gone to school until she was 7 years old, for her little toupee would not even cover her, and she had no wig, and perhaps no one thought she should have one. Each morning she had looked at herself in a mirror, thinking that perhaps she had grown a hair during the night. But there was not a single hair. She had looked at herself in streams and had thought perhaps she had seen a hair, and sometimes there might seem one until the waters moved, and she knew that what she had thought was a hair was the hair of a flower, or the hair of a moth passing over her, or a thin hair of light coming through a cloud. Perhaps it was the thin thread of a minnow. Perhaps it was a minnow star. She had looked into frozen streams, dreaming that she might have hair if she waited long enough. How she had envied her sisters who had been endowed with the most beautiful hair, hair into which they had wound cornflowers, and even her brothers who had had fine heads of hair. But she was this old baldy even then. And yet it was she who had gotten the pearl-handled penknife from the journeyman phrenologist, who was a great designer of octagon houses and who had visited the little one-room country school and had chosen her head as the most beautiful head of all because of its structure, because of the great common sense, because of the capacity, he had said, for the greatest dreaming and faith in something good. And she would go farther than all the others. He had brought the penknife with him because he had expected to find that a boy's head was the finest head, was willing to concede that a little girl's head was the finest, was greatly surprised to find this bald head gleaming like mother of pearl, or like the moon when there are no clouds. He was a peregrine, and never in his wanderings had tapped such a head as this. Usually the thatch of the grass hair intervened between him and his studies, but this bald dome was beautifully exposed, like a map where a man might see himself when there was no deception, no deceit, no illusion, when the only premise or foundation stone given was the bald head dreaming waters and clouds and winds, hair, feathers of birds, grass, flowers, all man's imagining, all woman's love. Hers was the most beautiful brain box he had ever seen in the world of the living, and he had not visited the world of the dead. Leaning close, he could hear a buzzing, snoring sound. Indeed, he had grown rhapsodic, was quite carried away by his own oratory, Miss McIntosh believed, her face turning from green to rose to gold in the sweepings and swayings of life as she remembered the old phrenologist with his penknife, his fingers tapping upon her forehead as if she were that melon which is hardest to know, and remembered the astonishment of everyone else that he had chosen her for the great prize. Why? Perhaps everyone else was wondering. He predicted that she would live in lands of clouds and live among kings of gold and castles and towers, for she showed this great ability, although her dome was bald as earth must have been the day before God moved over the face of the water. The way the mosaics of her skull bones fitted into the mosaics of her skull bones was something marvelous, and hers was the large bump which was common sense, and hers was the bump of the dreamer who would mirror a man, and hers was that sea greater than the sea of Azov. He said that her bare head would be shadowed by the wings of birds and moths and many hurricanes and lights of stars. He had encouraged her. He had praised her so much that all those old nonconformist Bible quoters had got mad. He had praised her so much that her mother thought that her head might be turned, that she was vain of her baldness. Her mother had made her a black velvet hood with which to cover her head, to hide her baldness from the world.